Well, welcome to Holy Week, the holiest week in the calendar of the United States, a week when we have an opportunity to choose between good and evil, and we have to take sides. There's no neutrality when good and evil are fighting in the arena of American culture. It's a day of huge national communion, where we come together to celebrate our common interests and our differences in a full contact, yelling and screaming way with guacamole at the Super Bowl. It is the high holy day of American secular society. It's just really kind of remarkable what's happened with the Super Bowl, because it way transcends any of the caring that most of the people who watch it actually have. I've been to Super Bowl parties, which were industry parties, and people just were silent for the commercials because that was the best part. And this year of the writers' strike, the commercials may be the best and most creative parts of anything that we see on television this week. People eat, drink, scream, sing, chant, fight, argue. It is a remarkable experience. And we're also, some of you may have heard, having an election. The fact that we had a person explaining the Mardi Gras named Hillary was not of significance. We're not going to lose our 401c3 because of that. I couldn't spell either of them, so it doesn't, the spelling, I'm somewhat honest and different. There's an election, and election really is our form of communion, our form of coming together and saying we are participants in something larger than ourselves. We have a voice and we have a vote, and by our acts and by our beliefs, we help to create and support democracy such as it is. Imperfect democracy, to be sure, but all democracies are imperfect, both in terms of structure and in terms of how information gets conveyed and who gets to buy the time. But it is still important that we believe in and contribute to our democracy with all of its flaws and with all of its failures. I know that it is easy to get cynical. It's easy to just say, you know, my vote doesn't make a difference. They do the same things however it is that you vote. The parties are the same. The candidates are the same. I'm not sure that my vote will be counted or that my vote counts. That's just demonstrably not true. Your vote and your voice and your choice counts. Now, it's also true that it's hard sometimes not to get discouraged, not to go through all of the cycles of infatuation with a candidate, of hope, of celebration, and then to watch the candidate either not gain traction or not get heard, drop out, even when the candidate says that he or she won't drop out and would never think of dropping out. The candidates go through the same cycles of hope and despair. They go through the same cycle of saying, something's moving, something's changing, I can feel it in the crowds. And they believe it. Having had a stepfather who ran for Congress and didn't have a chance, I got to watch the process of hope, denial, and mourning up close and personal. He got slaughtered. But up until the votes were in, there was this irrational hope, you know, somewhat like Saroyan's line, I knew that death was inevitable, but I thought it would make an exception for me. He knew how the polls were going. He knew who was in the district, but somehow he really thought that there was going to be magic in the air. Well, the candidates go through all of this, and so do we. Our candidate doesn't win, doesn't get elected, or probably the worst cause of despair is when our candidate does get elected and doesn't perform the way he or she promised that he or she would perform. I can remember voting for and against various candidates who turned out to be exactly the opposite of the platforms that they ran on. Life is an incomplete information problem, and you have to make your best judgment in terms of your perception of the person's character, and to some extent record, although some records and some platforms are moving targets, and it's kind of hard to know really what they believe today in front of this group. And that's difficult. That is difficult to deal with. And being human, kind of, I get discouraged. I get discouraged that this process is so long, so sometimes tedious, so dirty, where people distort, and, well, that's a kind word, where people lie, mischaracterize, and misspeak both their own positions and the positions of their opponents. It's easy to want to just run from it. I understand that, and I feel the impulse. Sometimes the whole process just feels like you're doing the disciplines of St. Ignatius, that you're just punishing yourself. I feel sometimes like the Shia crawling down the street, scourging themselves, or wearing hair shirts, because the process can just be, you want to take a shower after you've heard the candidates talk to each other. And then you get a situation where they're speaking absolute, I'm going to get into trouble on this, but absolute nonsense. I mean, I love watching this stuff. I love to have watched all of the debates. I really enjoy it, and sometimes it makes me crazy to watch, and I'm using this as an example, this is not an endorsement, but to watch Hillary and Obama discuss their health care plans is like watching medieval scholastics debating how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Because, incidentally, at least the medieval scholastics came up with an answer, which was all of the angels can. That seriously is the scholastic answer. But when Obama says, I'm for universal health care, and Hillary says, no, I'm for more universal health care, and yours leaves people out, no, mine doesn't, you can't pay for it. This is what they call in the computer world vaporware. My imaginary plan is going to cover more imaginary people than your imaginary plan. Anybody that took Politics 101 understands that nobody's plan and white paper and book and all 687 pages of it is going to be put into law the way that it is presented. It is going to go to the Congress. And the Congress is going to be hit upon by the lobbyists. And the lobbyists are going to make their changes. No one's plan is accepted the way it's presented. So for them to go on and on about whose imaginary plan is better is just one of the really remarkable pieces of disingenuity. How was that for saying junk? But what you get from it is a sense of the person's personality, philosophy, their ability to argue, their ability to defend. You might get a sense of who they are through the process of the debate, but you won't get, in my view, anything substantial. To pick on the Republican side for a moment, when Romney and McCain are debating about how we can lower everybody's taxes, we can have more and bigger wars, we can balance the budget, and nobody gets hurt. Well, that's never happened. I mean, that's like, okay, I can drop this hat and it's not going to fall. I mean, it's counter everything that in terms of how the world really works. Is it useless to watch the debates? No. You get a sense of the people, of how sharp they are, of what they will say, what they won't say, and most of them will say anything. But some have limits, and you can get an appreciation of character. And I think that ultimately that really is the critical issue. You can get an appreciation of something else about the process. And this is a little bit of self-hatred on my part. The media stink. The questions that they ask, both in the Republican and the Democratic debates, are terrible. They're not substantive. They are trying to lob bombs and start fights. They are not, what would you do under this situation? It is, well, your opponent said that under this situation, this is what he would do. What's wrong with that? Isn't that stupid? Doesn't Hillary's breath stink? Obama, did you really turn away from her and not want to shake her hand? Romney, do you really believe that McCain is a liberal? I mean, watching McCain and Romney call each other liberals is offensive to liberals everywhere, if you can find any, because liberals have somehow become progressives, but I'm not sure how that happened. But the media is interested in eyeballs. The media is interested in getting readers and getting viewers and having people watch the commercials. So they want not good substantive debate, but they want a fight. That's why Obama and Clinton were billed as, watch, they really don't like each other. It's going to be Ali Fraser. It's going to be the killer in Manila. Watch them fight. And then the media is going, oh, my God, they're playing nicely together. Oh, this is terrible. So that's when the questions come in about, well, isn't that an elbow to you, Senator Clinton? Well, no, we're just having fun here. It's pretty disgusting, because what the media are looking for is action and good television. They're not looking for good debates and a healthier body politic or participation. They are accentuating the differences and the negativity, and they are agent provocateurs. They are troublemakers looking to start a fire. They're walking into the political process and yelling fire, because it's exciting. Because they really enjoyed it when Hillary and Barack went at each other in New Hampshire and South Carolina. They didn't enjoy it when they played, and actually faked it probably, but played nice with each other. They really enjoy it that the conservatives are at each other's throats. It's great television. It's a lot of passion, but it's a big distraction from the issues. There's something even more destructive than the media, however, so I won't make the media the bad guys within the electoral process. More destructive even than the robocalls. The robocalls that misrepresent the position. I mean, there were robocalls in the last election where people were being called at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, vote for this candidate, and it was sponsored by the candidate's opponent, because they knew that if you kept waking people up at 2 o'clock in the morning, you weren't going to be making a lot of friends for that candidate. Well, that goes on, and the misrepresentation and the slate mailers that will put this strange coalition together of liberals and stick in the conservative Congress or assembly person that you don't know, or just the opposite, a bunch of conservatives and all of a sudden there's a liberal, because it's meant to misinform. There is a lot of that going on. The robocalls make me completely crazy. I have heard from my good friend Arnold a number of times already this week, and Arnold is really my best friend these days. And it's just, it's I hang up. Not just because it's Arnold. I mean, but the process is not good. But more important than that, there is a great danger in American politics. One is that all of the negativity drives the voters out, and we feel that we don't make a difference. And we feel that it doesn't make any difference ultimately who is elected. It does. Whatever your beliefs, think Supreme Court and think federal courts, it makes a difference who's elected. But the other is identity politics. And identity politics, which I'm about to define, is a clear and present danger to our republic. If you liked what happened in Yugoslavia when they broke into Eastern Orthodox, Roman Catholic, and Muslim. If Kenya looks really exciting and like a good idea, if Iraq seems like your idea of a picnic with Sunni and Shia and Kurds, go for the identity politics. They scare the hell out of me. It is voting for people because they share your affiliation. And the affiliation can be anything. It can be your religion. It can be your perceived ethnicity. It can be just about any superficial characteristic that you want to choose. Now, part of that is understandable, that people would be influenced by someone who has some common experience. I understand taking it into consideration. You Fullertonians take tremendous pride in accomplished Fullertonians, and I would name a couple if I could think of any past Kevin Costner and Fender guitars, but I'm sure there are very accomplished even in this room who are known on a national level. People take pride in a Californian. People take pride that Unitarians and Universalists have had 4.5 presidents of the United States. So that John Adams, John Quincy Adams, half of Thomas Jefferson, Millard Fillmore, William Howard Taft were presidents. And if a Unitarian Universalist were running, I would look at that Unitarian Universalist very seriously. It would not make me vote for him or her, however. We do have a Unitarian Universalist in the Congress, H. Fortney Pete Stark. He gave his first political speech in the church that I served in Hayward, Star King Hayward, when he was a lot younger and seemingly a little bit more moderate. I would look at a Unitarian Universalist maybe a second time because I would assume that there is something in our mutual experience and philosophy that's worth looking at. I would look at somebody that I had some sense of affiliation with. I think that's understandable. But I get concerned when the numbers really go crazy. When 88% of Mormons in Nevada vote for Romney. When over 70% of African Americans in South Carolina vote for Obama. I understand that it is a positive weight. When over 65% of evangelicals vote for Huckabee. I understand that that sense of connection and affiliation weighs in a candidate's favor, and I don't think that there's any way to avoid taking that weight and understanding it as a factor. But what presents the clear and present danger is when those factors become the reason that you will not vote for a candidate. When you will not vote for a candidate simply because the candidate is evangelical, or simply because the candidate is Mormon, or African American, or Muslim, or Middle Eastern, or Jewish, or gay, or a woman. Now, it may not be philosophically completely consistent, but I think I am okay counting it at least enough to give somebody a second look for a yes. But I'm very uncomfortable with the identity politics that says, I expect you to vote for the group and to engage in groupthink just because this person is whatever category we've picked out. Or to vote against a person just because they are whatever category is difficult or frightening or foreign. There are decent and indecent people of every religious group, of every ethnic group, of every tribe. And we need to look at people and make our ultimate judgments based on our understanding, even if incomplete, of who they are characterologically, by their records, and to some extent by their platforms and their records of really living their platforms, not on the surface characteristics of a faith or an ethnicity or the content of the melanin in their skin and not the content of their character. The surface things can attract us, but we need to make our judgments on something more important. And where our judgments become important and where and why our votes make a difference is this. 45% of the people who show up who are registered Republicans, 45% of the country is going to vote for the Republican candidate. 45% is going to vote for the Democratic candidate, assuming no third, fourth, fifth parties. That's the way it's going to be, and there's an open 10%. That's one of the two factors of what makes elections happen and why votes are important. Because the elections, national elections, are decided by two main factors. Who shows up? It seems self-evident, but it's really important. Will the right sit on their hands without enthusiasm if it's McCain? Possibly. Will the progressives sit on their hands unenthusiastically but still vote but not work if it's Hillary? Possibly. Who shows up with passion is a big determinant of the election. The other is the 10% in the middle. They usually fall somewhat randomly across the spectrum. But if one of those external factors, hatred of McCain or hatred of Mormons and Romney or hatred of Hillary or fear of somebody with a Muslim-sounding name and dark skin, is enough to pull people in the middle or push people in the middle one way or another, that can be the determinant of the election. At no time in my lifetime has it been more important for people across the political spectrum to exercise our franchise. Democracy depends on an informed electorate that participates. Despair and sloth are cheap emotions and cop-outs. I understand why we sometimes feel it. But we have to act in an election as we act in life, as if our choices were important and powerful and made a difference. Because I believe fundamentally that they do. That we have a responsibility to keep our democracy alive by participating in it. When Eliot says, this is the way the world ends, this is the way the world ends, this is the way the world ends, not with a bang but a whimper, disuse and cynicism are toxic to the body politic. Participation, even if, as my wife and I agreed last night to cancel out each other's votes, even if you're doing that, participate because the ballot is long and our commitment to make democracy work is as important a commitment as we make. I'm going to vote. I'm not going to do the old joke about voting early and often. I do think that there's one other thing that I haven't spoken of, and that is early voting is a catastrophe because people have missed the zeitgeist, the social mime, that the changes that have happened in the last 2 weeks, the millions of Californians who sent their ballots in early, and the millions of Californians who voted for John Edwards and were abandoned, and the dozens of Californians who voted for Rudy and were abandoned. Don't infer anything from that. Other than I believe in the law of large numbers. When you pile up enough large numbers, we often get something that passes for wisdom. Not always. But the good thing about democracy, real democracy, is it's not about one election. Our faith in democracy is based on our knowledge and the record that when somebody loses an election, we don't have a coup. We don't have a civil war. The losers are not shot and hauled off to prison. There's another election. And even when people think an election has been stolen, they stay alive to run again and to try again. And this is a faith that has been upheld by experience. But it's a faith that needs to be renewed by every person over the age of 18 at the ballot box. The guacamole this afternoon will be both fun and fattening and not particularly good for our bodies, although there are some nice facts that will keep your hair shiny. Our democracy is renewed on Tuesday when we participate in what is an important communion that keeps our democracy alive.